Welcome to Halal Money Matters, sponsored by Saturna Capital. I'm Munim Salam. This one hits a little bit home for me because we're going to be talking about the concept of blended families and what that means from a financial perspective. So we're happy to have and honored to have a special guest, as we are always, Sheikh Sohail Mullah, who graduated with a bachelor's degree from CSUN, got his master's degree in social work, and then also went off to study Islamic sciences at Al-Azhar University. And in fact, that's when I actually met him, was probably maybe a year before he was about to head off and pursue his Islamic studies. He is one of those people that does counseling for a living and comes across these kind of stories and anecdotes and maybe guidances that we can all learn from when it comes to finances and blended families. So without further ado, Sheikh Sohail Mullah.
JazakAllah khair, Sheikh Sohail, for coming on the podcast. It's a very important topic, and I'm really glad to be able to share with you on this topic. Actually, when I first thought about the topic of blended families, and I actually have one, and so that was an important aspect of why we wanted to do it. But you were one of the first people that came up, so I'm really excited and happy that you're able to join us. So welcome.
JazakAllah khair. Thank you for having me.
Alhamdulillah. So like I said, this is kind of a little bit personal. I have some personal experiences I can share. And as from you, being in the profession of counseling, I'm sure you've seen a lot of cases and those types of things. So I wanted to kind of get the ball rolling and just talk a little bit about, besides the money aspect of it, maybe a little bit some complexities of blended family. And what I mean by blended family is, you know, after one or both of the parties have gotten a divorce, they have children from that divorce and they're getting married again to their spouse, and they may or may not have children. So there are some different scenarios, but generally speaking, it's two different families trying to come together. Almost like whenever I tell people my story, they're like, ah, the Brady Bunch. Exactly like the Brady Bunch. So maybe, I'm not sure if the newer generation would know that, but I grew up on Brady Bunch. So
yeah, when you started talking, that's the reference that came up in my mind too, right? And that works for our generation, but perhaps younger folks have no clue what that is. But yeah, the blended family comes with potentially many, many blessings, but also many, many challenges, as you know. The blessings are that you get to experience companionship at a later stage in life. You get to revision what family looks like. You know, it can be very fulfilling in an interesting way, where husband and wife who have children from previous marriages, now their children have these new step-sibling relationships and, you know, and the interesting sort of things that happen in that space in terms of the alignment of that family and so forth. So all of those things can be a tremendous blessing. Your family is growing and they're not blood related, right? That can be a beautiful thing.
I mean, I usually refer to my stepkids as stepkids, and just that's because nobody understands it. But the first time I heard it was a very beautiful phrase. She was like, I have a couple of kids and I have four bonus kids. And so, you know, or especially, you know, that was really cool. I really liked it, but I started using it and then people are like, what's that? You know, then I had to go back to the stepkids. So I went back to it, but I really liked this idea of, you know, it's a bigger family. It is a blessing and a bonus to be able to have something like that happen. So, I mean, it comes with the challenges, but definitely a blessing as well. So.
I love that terminology, bonus children.
Yeah, bonus children, exactly.
Like you said, there's the challenges, right? And the challenges can be very, very heavy. It's not only about the dynamic between man and woman, husband and wife, but you have to sort everything else out. The children from both families, ideally, you want them to get along. The stepmom with her bonus children and stepdad with his bonus children, you want to have the best relationship there. And those things can be challenging. I have a friend of mine, he's an imam, and he told me when he remarried and he had now these bonus children, right? Stepchildren from his new wife. He said, man, it's hard to love somebody else's children because they have their dad, they have their biological dad. And then, you know, and sometimes there's resistance from the children from the other side, and they're now having to navigate their biological father plus the new home that they're living in. And so there's so many dynamics to it, so many moving parts, and that's where the challenges lie.
Yeah, you know, I've actually been multiple times of kind of describing it. If you take all members of your family, your kids, your bonus kids, and everybody, and you draw a line between every single connection there is, and then draw a line for all of them, that's how many complications potentially you could have with that. So it is. So the larger it is, obviously, the more complications or lines you can draw.
Rather than freshly married 20-something-year-old husband and wife who just have that one line between them that they have to figure out, right?
Absolutely. That's so true. So let's kind of think about it now. I mean, there's many, many different aspects we can talk about. from the blended family perspective, but this is the finance show about Halal Money Matters. So we'll kind of restrict it obviously to this area, knowing that there's a lot of other areas, you know, societal, social, personal, familial, all the different relationships that you have. But I wanted to try to focus on just the financial aspects of it. And starting off, I mean, when I thought about this topic, it was like, I could break it down into three different areas, right? Like, what do you think about finances prior to you getting married again, during the marriage itself, and then maybe afterwards, you know, one of us passes away, or so maybe we can take that in that step-by-step format. And, you know, one of the things that happens is that for majority of the people, and I don't want to say for everybody, but you're coming out of a divorce. Most likely it was very messy. Inshallah, it wasn't, but, you know, maybe it was. You're just getting over this huge thing where you've lost maybe 50% of your assets, maybe gained it, depending on where you are. And now you're looking at it from a new perspective of, I'm getting married and I need to think about this all over again. So what are some things that you might have come across in your experiences that have helped kind of bridge that gap? Or what are some things that definitely are must-haves, need to have, and maybe want to have?
There definitely needs to be a lot of conversation, and there needs to be honesty. The husband needs to be honest with himself. The wife needs to be honest with herself as they're going into this marriage about, you know, what they want and what they don't want. Chances are they have experiences that they have from their last marriage that are going to color what they want for themselves in the future, right? You have to be honest with yourself there. Those are internal conversations, so to speak. And then there need to be very explicit conversations that you have with the other party, because you want to set up real expectations and you want to verbalize all of those things. You want to articulate all of those things before you get into the marriage, and there were assumptions as to what things would look like, right? So there needs to be honesty as to what financial obligations are there as it relates to the previous spouse and children from that spouse, whether those children live with you or live with the other spouse or whatever the scenario may be. So things need to be clear. Things need to be out in the open, and there needs to be a lot of discussion so that you are then setting yourself up on the best foot.
Yeah. So we can look at it from two perspectives. Like, one is that from the Shari'i perspective of what is required from the legal perspective. And then the other one is what is ahsan to be able to do. So let's start with both of those and say, okay, well, from a legal perspective, what should be done prior to the marriage taking place? And then maybe we talked about good practices about sharing, but and being open and honest. But what about the shutting side of it, if there is any?
Yeah, from the legal perspective, if you're just a regular, you know, American law perspective, that prenuptials are a consideration to be had, right? And chances are there's at least one of two parties that has some trepidation, some hesitations about what they're going to get into and what the future implications could hold. Now, look, the divorce rate for blended marriages is some 70%+. And so that's just statistically speaking. So you have to be real about things, having those sort of legal protections, if that's something that you feel is important for you to do, and then to ensure that the other party is on board. The prenuptial is a prenuptial. If you don't have it and you haven't talked about it, then you bring all of these tensions into the marriage from the beginning, from the get-go. And you can easily just put that on the side. Make everything clear. These are my assets. I'm going to hold on to these regardless, you know, that sort of thing. So you just make everything clear. From a Sharia perspective, I don't know if there's any particular considerations as such that need to be taken into account that differ from somebody getting married for the first time.
Okay. In previous podcasts, we've talked about the fact that even if you're just starting off, I mean, sometimes prenuptials are important to be able to think, consider, and really talk about and discuss whether it's right for you or not. So that's really good. And then also in having discussions prior to the marriage and talk about prenuptials, one of the things that I've noticed is some people, you know, have their own separate trusts that they create. For example, the husband would have a trust or the wife would have a trust depending on who has different assets. And that kind of clarifies as well. Maybe from there, there's no need for a prenuptial, but maybe you just do it in the form of having your own family trust for you and your children. And then she has her own, or I'm saying that for she because I'm male, but she has her own trust that she creates as well. So that might be another alternative. So now we get into now from a perspective of the marriage itself. Now you're in the marriage, your kids are there. And again, you can paint so many different scenarios, you know, large family, small family, you know, participant, other spouse, ex-spouse, non-participatory, other spouse, you know, all of those different types of things. But let's start from the obligations part of it. Then, you know, like, for example, going into the marriage or being in the marriage, as the kids get older or they're younger, is there any obligation on one spouse or another to be able to take care of those kids that are not theirs. And from that perspective, is it the same rules that apply for your own kids versus your bonus kids?
Yeah. So a man in Islam is a father is responsible for providing for his dependents. His dependents are his wife and his children. His wife that he's currently married to, right? So he's not responsible for spousal support for the previous wife, unless, of course, there's some sort of court order that's mandating that, dictating that side of the Sharia per se, but one should not renege on that if that's a responsibility. But he's responsible for taking care of his biological children, and then he's also responsible for taking on the new dependents that he's taken on. So he's married to, let's say, his second wife, and she has her children from her previous marriage. He's responsible for taking care of her needs as well as their shelter, food, and clothing. Those are the basics. And that is his obligation in the time that they are with him. Now, that's in absence of those children's biological father taking care of those needs. I'm only framing it in this way, right? Because I'm a male as well. Let's say, for example, my second wife, she has her own children. I shouldn't say my second wife. I mean, a second,
yeah.
Right? And actually, it was a cool little comedy piece right there.
Yeah.
The obligations towards the new wife and her children. Look, if the new wife, her ex-husband, her children's father is taking care of them financially, then obviously I don't need to take care of them financially, right? Whatever I provide for them is above and beyond. This bonus is my own sadaqah that I'm providing to these minors that already have someone else who is responsible for them. In absence of their biological father providing, for whatever reason, whatever that may be, whether he's not alive, whether he's a negligent or what have you, then if they're in my household, I'm responsible.
And that's from an Islamically legal perspective.
Sharia perspective.
Okay. So like you said, it would be like shelter, obviously, would be one of them, shelter, food, clothing, you know, those type of things that are there. You know, from a Sharia perspective, obviously there's one, like you mentioned about the imam who said it was very difficult for them to love his bonus children. Is there some type of obligation or something like that to be able to keep, for example, my kids and my bonus kids equal?
Yeah.
The reason why I ask that is sometimes you do have a situation where you're coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds. Let's supposing you have three kids, you're now set up in one way of life. Now you have three more, and now you're obviously your economic situation is going to change. So what would be something you can advise there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. At the very least, what's ahsan, what's best? The general rule is that your children, you provide for them equally. And there should not be feelings of jealousy, feelings of, wait a second, he or she has more than I do, and that's not fair. Parents are responsible for making their children feel loved to the fullest extent. And part of that love is showing them they're treating them equal and they're not favoring one over the other. Now, that's in terms of the financial provision. In terms of the heart, you know, even the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was the best of creation. He's married to multiple wives. He has love for Aisha that surpasses others. And he says those things in, you know, financial provision and so forth, I have control of that. My heart, I don't. And that may very likely be the case, right? A father has more affinity towards his biological children. Maybe he's seen them born and he's raised them from young and so on and so forth. Whereas these other children have come to his life later in life. And so that's going to be, you know, probably a very common scenario. But as much love as he can extract and show and pull out and try to be that best person that he can be, and definitely not overtly show favoritism towards his own children within that which is within his control, is important for then increasing the success rate of his new family, his new blended family staying together and for all parties to be happy. So again, I'm talking from the male perspective. One has to be a bigger man about things.
Yeah. I'm going to push back a little bit, if you don't mind, to give you kind of the opposite example of that, which is, you know, that my kids could easily come back to me and say, well, look, man, you got married again. You took the choice of taking another form. Why am I having to maybe lower my standard of what I would have gotten normally because of the fact of the decision that you made to take on a blended family?
Yeah. 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 I can't say that I've lived that and that I've experienced that, to be honest with you. But again, part of the process of remarrying is having very honest conversations with your own children about what life may look like moving forward. You know, we're living by ourselves. And if I get married again to this woman and she has these other children, when our financial situation may change. And so, you know, there is a prepping for your own children as to what that future may look like. But yeah, even if, let's say, those feelings do come up, you know, again, I don't know about the very specific because I haven't researched it. Is there a financial obligation that now varies between one's biological children and one's bonus children that are in his household now? That's an important question.
The way I think about it, and this is not a legal opinion or anything like that, just my thoughts on this. You know, every child comes with his own risk or his sustenance. And so you don't talk to your kids about having another child, right? And saying, hey, because we're going to have another child, we might have to technically suffer a little bit more because there's an extra mouth to feed the family. So from that perspective, you take care of the new child and you equally spread out whatever you can. And the same thing would be for the bonus kids as well. You don't need to have a conversation with your kids. That would be the same thing as, you know, they're coming into this life with their own risk. And if you're that mechanism to provide that for them, unless you're going to reward you for it, if their father's not around and that type of thing too. So
true. But only because you brought up this pushback earlier, if my kids are teenagers and now I'm marrying a woman and she has younger children, and well, wait a second, Mal, you are about to buy me a car. I can imagine that comes with this challenges, right? Financial limitations. So raising our children to have bigger hearts, right? And to help them understand our own lot in life. And I mean, you know, the individualistic sort of culture that we grow up in the West versus reminding our families about our roots and who we really are and the societies and the communal outlook that Islam promotes and proposes first as a general principle in Sharia. Haqqul jama'a yuqaddam ala haqqil fard, that the right of the group takes precedence over the right of the individual. And so that principle applies here, that, you know, we have a familial responsibility. There's other people. It's not just you.
And you have to be very mindful of your children and how they're going through, because sometimes it's not voiced. It's felt and it's kept inside. So the example of a car, about to buy a car, but it didn't. Sometimes they're not going to say it, but they might feel it. And that might manifest itself in different ways later on, right then, that type of thing. So you really have to be very careful in regards to that. So one part of it is, you know, okay, well, obviously the shelter, the food, the clothing, that type of thing. But the other part of it would be, okay, now they're getting older. Now you're still married to your mashallah, your wife, and your kids are getting older now. Now there's college, there's marriage, there's mahar, all of these other things are going on. And so again, ideally the situation would be, well, their father would be providing for them. And inshallah, that's great. If you can do that, then maybe the husband's obligation would be not there. But what if that's not the case for whatever reason, right? Is there an obligation to be able to say, you know what? You know, I do have to provide for them equally, even when it comes to college and that type of thing. Or the other way is to say, you know, I mean, yeah, you either have to, you know, get scholarships or wife has to work or, you know, those type of things. So,
you know, I mean, there's not an obligation per se from a Sharia perspective, even for my own biological children, that I have to provide education, right? From being very technical, but it's a urfi matter, right? It's a cultural, customary sort of reality that the Sharia also acknowledges. Like, if this is the standard, then that standard should be engaged. Now, can you call it an actual obligation? Is it fard for me to provide, again, even my own biological children with the college education? I would be hard-pressed to say that. And so therefore, you know, the same with my bonus children, for example. But now, again, it's a matter of you're taking on these dependents into your home. And when you do that, when you marry a woman and she has other children from her previous marriage, you're also in a de facto sense taking on the responsibilities that are generally understood to come. Now, is it fard? Is it an obligation? Again, be hard pressed to say that. But would it be the right thing to do? Would it be the stand up thing to do? Would it be generally expected? I guess part of that would entail some discussion prior to, you know, like, well, what does the future look like? Maybe my new wife, maybe she has a family that where there's some wealth there. She knew her father has kind of taken on some responsibility, or she works and does well for herself. And she tells you when you get married, look, I'm going to take care of my kids. I'm going to provide for them. You don't have to take on some of those realities. Then that's there, right? So a lot of that, I think, really should be just to work out with one another.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any real life examples that you've come across?
you know, over the years, I've dealt with a few blended families here and there, and you know, one or two of them that are quite close. And oftentimes, there is a lot of familial affinity towards children whose parents went through a divorce. So, you know, again, the, like I said earlier, the grandfather may play a heavier role. The mother, by virtue of the fact that, you know, she had to work through a divorce, and then she had to provide for herself to take care of her family, having her husband provide, you know, she engaged her own career. And so a lot of times those things are already worked out because, you know, I've had to, but that's not always the case. Sometimes one spouse has been maybe living off spousal support and they haven't been able to re-engage in career and do their own thing. So I think there's probably so many different ways in which that plays out in people's real lives, you know?
That's a good point. Getting now towards the latter part of it, right? Which is now talking about it from a, you know, what happens when you pass away or your spouse passes away? And then what happens to the mawadith or the distribution of assets that are concerned? Now, ideally it would be in a situation where, you know what, you each of you had a trust and then that trust was able to basically say, this is the, how the assets will be divided. But even in the form of trust, you still have to mention how, from a Sharia perspective, it'll be decided. So in that, I do understand what I learned was is that the spouse, if your wife is getting the portion, well, obviously it's you're married to her now that she's going to get it. But when it talks about the children and the bonus children, are those included in the schedule of children or is it just your biological children that are needed?
Yeah, as you know, the Quran is very specific, right? There's not ambiguity as to who gets what. When somebody leaves this world, inheritance law is very specified. And there's really no variance that one can engage beyond that. But there are some mechanisms that the Sharia allows for which wealth can be transferred. If they have their children, and my bonus children, if I die today, they don't take anything from me from the specified shares that are there. However, during my lifetime, I can give them from my wealth. During my lifetime, I can specify in my trust and give them up to 1/3 of my wealth upon my death. That's sanctioned in the Sharia, that 1/3. And so that's something that can be written into the trust. And that can be a significant amount, you know. The other medium by which they'll also receive is when I leave this world, my new wife, she will receive a portion, a share, and she can dispense that and, you know, provide for her children from that as well. So there's still these provision, these ways by which provision will take place, or you can write into your trust as to how they will take, but you can't change the specific shares that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has outlined. The one way that that can happen is if there is, if someone becomes a sibling by wada', by a suckling, right? Taking from the mother's breast milk, if the children are young and so forth, that then they become of equal rank.
Sure, sure. So there is that difference between your biological by your sibling or your, you know, children by suckling, as you mentioned it, and then your bonus children. That's three separate categories. And just to be clear, what you're saying is that the bonus children are not specified as your biological children when it comes to the mawadith or the inheritance schedule. However, there are provisions you can make in your lifetime, in the 1/3 that you can give to anybody or anyone or anything that you want to, they could easily classify within those categories and be able to, you know, have some title and inheritance. That's the case. And have you come across any cases, best practices or something along those lines within your practice yourself in this regard?
It all goes back to what family life is all about. Family that's premised on love and mercy, which وَجَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً. You know, we place between husband and wife love and mercy. And then if that love and mercy is then to be displayed and carried into the children, and if you're marrying a new wife and the bonus children come along, that should absolutely be the spirit that showers down upon that new family structure that you have. And ultimately, that's the best provision you can give, even for your own biological children. Forget about money. Love and mercy, good treatment, respect, decency, positive discipline, positive parenting, you know, just being connected. All of these standard sort of things that we know are important and we all struggle to on some level, perhaps to implement, right? That's the best provision you can give them before the financial provision, because that love and that mercy that you inject in them, that's going to make them that beautiful person, that better person that's going to help them navigate life. You can give them $1 billion, and I can name you a bunch of examples right now of people who inherited tremendous amount of generational wealth, but they're some of the world's most evil people and wreaking havoc upon this earth as we speak. And so they receive love and mercy, right? So that's number one.
And I want to kind of take a step back a little bit. So a couple approaches, you know, and said, look, we're thinking about doing a blended marriage, and this is, you know, number of kids we have and that type of thing. What is your advice to them? Is your advice, you know, great idea, let's do it? Or is it like, whoa, you better be careful what you're getting into, and these are the things that you look at? What do you advise potentials?
That's a great question. And it's a very important question. The latter, everybody has the right to re-experience love and to relive companionship if it didn't work out the way we had planned the first time around and so forth. And Islam encourages that, absolutely. When you look at the lives of the Sahaba, there was a lot of exchanging, and someone passes away and then somebody else marries that woman. And these are major Sahaba. They divorce someone and then somebody else marries that woman and so forth. So, you know, the preservation of people within homes and to have a good home environment and to have a mother and father, that's so important. So in terms of, you know, what do we do when people are at that stage and they're exploring it? We tell them, yes, by all means, explore it, but be ready. Do all of your homework. We encourage premarital counseling, of course, for all people that are exploring marriage. But for those that are exploring a blended family situation, even more so, there's so much more to talk about. There's so much more, like you said, all of those lines, those multiple points of connection, all of those things should be explored, should be touched upon prior to marriage, just to make sure you're giving yourself the best chance of success, because you've set out expectations that are lined up rather than making assumptions and you make something out of you and me. So, you know, you'd be very clear about having those conversations to the full extent. We encourage it, but we also want you to take the right steps before you do that.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen that advice being taken and most people saying, yeah, this is really too complicated for us to do anything with? Or is it mostly like, yeah, I think we can do this?
You know, I'll be honest, I can't say that I've seen droves of people that have kind of engaged that and me being at that point of intersection when they're doing that. You know, generally speaking, in the Muslim community, I feel that we fall short in terms of fully understanding the challenges, the complexities that come with marriage and the lifestyle changes that that's going to entail. Oftentimes we're trying to find alignment after we've already been married, and then we find out there's some fundamental irreconcilable views of the world, irreconcilable differences, no problem. That's part of marriage. We have, and you know, in the field of marriage, what we call perpetual problems. I'm a spender, you're a saver. You're an extrovert, I'm an introvert. You know, you're a neat person, I'm a messy person. And we're always going to have a level of conflict over those things. There's no problem with that. The majority of problems in marriage are what we call perpetual problems. But knowing where those things are from the beginning, as much as we can, and especially about our views of what marriage is supposed to be, those things need to be explicit from the get-go.
So, you know, it seems to me that there's not a lot of research done in this area, or at least there's not a lot of translations from the Arabic to the English that I'm aware of. But one thing that does come to mind, and that's there's a beautiful hadith about the Prophet ﷺ when he married Salama. And, you know, Salama had a lot of children because she was older in age. And so when the Prophet made the proposal for marriage to Salama, she responded back and she said, I'm an old woman with many children. And the response of the Prophet was, and I'm a man with children as well, and your children will be mine. I just thought it was a beautiful hadith to be able to put out there for this particular area, because it really talks about the stepchildren.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. That's such a beautiful hadith, right? That
it is.
That's it. That's what we're talking about earlier. I'm going to be that father. I'm going to be that caretaker. I'm going to show that love. And I'm going to provide not just bare minimum, like what are Sharia bare minimum? That's not how we shouldn't be looking at things like that. By the way, you know, there is the spirit of the law and then there's the letter of the law. You know, unfortunately, when you have people that navigate marriage by the letter of the law, there is a tremendous amount of unfulfillment on the other side. Because you're dealing with me with legal provisions, and as if this is a legal contract rather than this is a contract of two hearts coming together, two people mixing their lives together to the fullest. We're garments for each other. We cover each other. We take care of each other. We help each other walk towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, jointly walking down Sirat al-Mustaqim, that straight path towards, and I need you on every step of that way, but I don't need you as this person that's just dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and it's about, yeah, black and white, building this obligation. That's not what marriage is, and definitely not how a second marriage should be conducted either.
We're coming to the end, I think, but I wanted to allow you to be able to say the last words, if you don't mind. And it's a really, really important topic. I know it's not a topic that affects everybody, and inshallah, it won't affect everybody, right? That's the goal to do that, but it will affect, you know, some of the people some of the time. And so it was an important topic for us to cover. So thank you for joining us, but I'll leave you with the last words, if you don't mind.
Sure. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help all of our brothers and sisters who are navigating marriage for the second time around and having to reconfigure their families and striving to ensure that they have a, you know, a household that's full of laughter and happiness and love and mercy. It's not an easy venture. It's not an easy journey, but it's something that we absolutely need to pay attention to in the Muslim community, because divorce is a reality and divorce rates continue to climb. And there's no reason at all, then there should be no stigma at all when people are seeking to remarry. And if people already have children from the previous marriage, unfortunately, there is a stigma in certain communities. Well, she already has children from a previous marriage. I don't know if I want to engage that. No, we should absolutely encourage the engagement of that, because of the fact that there is a need for people to establish homes where children receive love and care from mom and maybe a new dad, and dad and maybe a new mom. And so it's absolutely imperative that we, you know, put some energy and focus on that in the community. And I thank you, Brother Munim, for engaging this space and engaging this topic for those people that are curious about, well, how do I do this?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for your insightful thoughts, and obviously an ongoing discussion. And finance is not only one aspect of this entire thing. There's a lot of different moving parts to this discussion, but I really appreciate your time, and inshallah, may Allah bless you and continue to shower you and your family with barakah.
Allah bless you.
Thank you for listening to Halal Money Matters. If you like what you hear, please do rate us on the app stores and also leave us a review. It helps other people find us a lot easier.
The thoughts and opinions expressed on Halal Money Matters do not necessarily reflect the views of Saturna Capital, Amana Mutual Funds, or their affiliates. Please consider an investment's objectives, risks, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. To obtain this and other important information about the Amana Funds in a current prospectus or summary prospectus, please visit amanafunds.com or call toll-free 1-800-728-8762. Please read the prospectus or summary prospectus carefully before investing. The Amana Funds are distributed by Saturna Brokerage Services, member FINRA and SIPC, and a wholly owned subsidiary of Saturna Capital, the investment advisor to the Amana Funds. Investing involves risk, including the risk that you could lose money. The Amana Funds restrict investments to those companies consistent with Islamic and sustainable principles, which limits opportunities and may affect performance. This material is for general information only and is not a research report or commentary on any investment products offered by Saturna Capital. This material should not be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security in any jurisdiction where such an offer or solicitation would be illegal. We do not provide tax, accounting, or legal advice to our clients, and all investors are advised to consult with their tax, accounting, or legal advisors regarding any potential investment. Investors should not assume that investments in the securities and/or sectors described were or will be profitable. This podcast is prepared based on information Saturna Capital deems reliable. However, Saturna Capital does not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the information. Investors should consult with a financial advisor prior to making an investment decision. The views and information discussed in this commentary are at a specific point in time, are subject to change, and may not reflect the views of the firm as a whole. All material presented in this publication, unless specifically indicated otherwise, is under copyright to Saturna. No part of this publication may be altered in any way, copied or distributed without the prior express written permission of Saturna Capital.